are back, episode 39, Underground Espionage. Tara, somehow, some way, we are back.
So I don't know. Does it feel like it's been ages? Like we've been like around the world and back.
It does feel like ages. Technically, this is still just this is still in the week after the last episode. It's, you know, it's more than 7 days. Yeah. I think I'm just going to put this up right after we record it. So it'll just come out minutes after we finish recording. I think I'll just go ahead and do that.
Perfect.
Saturday.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was trying to remember what day it was.
It is Saturday. Somehow, some way, we are battered. We are bruised. We're a few less teeth. We're a few less dollars. But we are limping towards the
finish line. Well, we have a wealth of experience and an endless font of joy within ourselves because it is this Christmas season. You know, we all have each other. Thank you so much, you wonderful people, for being here
with us
in Underground Espionage. We all have each other.
This has been a really fun year doing this series. Really have enjoyed building the Underground Espionage world. And welcome to any new listeners. It's been really cool getting messages and notes from people, especially who are just coming to this series of ours new. And, you know, of course, Noise Extra, we have years and years of stuff over there. So always feel free to go catch up there. Obviously, the three of us, we're comrades. We're brothers and sister. and who knows what the future holds for us, but we're always together. We're always in some way, shape, or form, Noise Extra, but we are also Underground.
Yeah, we just had a blast with Gray on Monday.
We did. That was a lot of fun. The last Surf and Dead of the year. That was a real good one. It's always good. You know, that's been something in the past few years that I think we've really grown to love. As I've said, not something that I ever, never in my mind, we were DJs. I've never thought to do that. I mean,
I like to think of it as I'm just the person who pushes play.
Well, look, it's not just that, though. I think you're...
Well,
I
know it's not that, but I think it's funnier if I say that. Yeah, especially you know what, the part you don't like it for yourself, but I'll say
like
it for
you,
me.
I don't like you selling yourself short, Tara. I would like to sell you tall.
Sell you tall. You know, it kind of relates. Maybe it's the mentality when we have been. I don't even know how much we plan on saying. So we were in Kentucky. We were in Indianapolis.
Yes.
We were in Phoenix.
We were in the Indianapolis airport for five or so hours
for an eternity. We were in the Nashville airport several times. We have been so many places. Yeah. That were apparently important to football. We were chased around the country by footballs.
Yes.
I don't want to. We've said too much. And you know, I had already said too, like, there's more dental stuff, but I'm just not going to bring it up. You know, like, we discussed dental stuff. Here's the thing I want to talk about. There's two important things that are relevant to what we discuss. One, no matter what you eat for breakfast, I've now decided that no matter what you eat for breakfast, you're going to be hungry right after. Like,
this
we
is
just
definitely
ate pancakes.
A theme. This is a plot. We had pancakes and we're...
If you have a tiny bit of cereal like you do, Mike, you're immediately
hungry. It's the
same.
Hungry. So might as well go for the less cows.
Hungry. If you have a fucking sandwich, you're hungry. We just had pancakes and sausage. Hungry.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no matter what you do, the first thing you eat, it's like almost like nullified an hour later.
You might as well go for the fewer cows.
Yeah, you might as well. You might as well just suck it up and wait because you're going to be hungry at fucking...
I am right now.
Really. I know. I would like to eat everything. So I just wanted to say that. Anybody agree with me? Do you have anything that you can eat where you're like 3 hours later, you're not like, I want to eat everything that exists? Just let us know. And then second of all, if that is second, could be like fourth or fifth. Who knows at this point, not counting. Satin sheets, babe.
Look.
That has been something. So we get home from travels. Our last day of travels, we were delayed at the Indianapolis airport. It was so fucking weird. And then in Phoenix, and that was weird. And we were just exhausted. And we got back to our home bed, and I was so happy to see my buckwheat pillow. And I was like, oh, God. And we get in the bed, and I was like, fuck this. I love our bed. I'm getting new sheets. We need new sheets. I want to, you know, ramp up the bed game, you know, because I had missed our bed so much, Mike. And everyone else. So I played it safe. I've been wanting to get satin sheets. I think it's kind of our vibe. It's very sleazy. You know, if we we have satin leopard print wallpaper in our room, and a number of other things draped about, so it looks like some den of iniquity.
We've always called it the den of iniquity. Yeah.
So why not just really just go in there and get satin sheets? But then I got nervous because I was like, what if?
Sliding all around.
Well, the thing I was the most worried about, like everybody I've talked to that had satin sheets, like my family members have tried it out. Like we have friends, you know, we discuss satin sheets. Why not? And they just say their pillows won't stay on their bed. And that's what they hate is that they're always shooting out from under their head. Their pillows won't stay on their bed and their blankets won't stay on their bed. And they're just falling off constantly. So it seemed like kind of like a tumultuous nightmare to have satin sheets.
You know, I was even skeptical as well.
So I was so nervous. So we get in bed and I ordered black satin sheets. And then another set of sheets that are black with red roses on them, you know, because you got to keep it classy.
Real classy.
So I kind of hedge my bets. The satin sheets arrive first, like, honestly, the next morning. I'll be damned. I fucking love them.
I love them. I've actually found the pillows stay on better. I found everything
the pillows stay on
better.
Like, how do the pillows even stay on? I don't know what holds them
on. I feel it's keeping cool. Mm-hmm. And I am a fan.
But full disclosure, we don't use a top sheet because I only ordered the bottom sheet and pillowcases. So maybe the other people's problem is the top sheet. But I mean, honestly, Mike, you can't handle a top sheet.
No.
It's too many things. You can only have one thing on top of you. So you
got to
pick
it. Not a multitasker, okay?
No, you're not a sleeping multitasker. I mean, everywhere we went, we get out of the bed the next morning from place to place, and it's just ripped up into shreds. Like the blankets are in a pile somewhere in the room. The dust ruffle somehow comes off the bottom. I don't know how you do it, but you can really tear up a bed, babe.
Well,
but
I'm loving these satin sheets. I'll tell you that. I didn't expect to love them as much
either.
As I did, but I am.
They've stayed
fan.
On. You can turn over really easily. I don't feel like they get all wrinkled up under me. Like, I don't like anything wrinkly. I don't like my top blankets wrinkled. I don't like the bottom sheet. And they don't feel wrinkly. They feel great. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to keep the red rose or if I should return them and get another set of satin sheets.
Look, I'm loving it, Tara. I feel like we've, you know, a plot line throughout this year is just upgrading our home.
Tips, tricks, hit us up. Let us
know. The UE listeners have been along with this ride from tiling our bathroom to our mirrored cabinets. Now to our satin sheets. Look.
I feel like they're going to be like, we all sleep on satin sheets. How do you guys not do it? Like,
UE listeners
are decadent.
I'm glad
you finally caught up.
They're decadent like us. They want to enjoy their bed like we do.
Yep.
And, you know, if anyone wants to come enjoy our bed with us. Well,
sleeping on satin sheets is the hardest thing to like discuss.
You can't be a dude.
I just say a lot.
That kind of knocks you out. So there you go.
Oh, you're not gonna let your sweet buddies.
Absolutely not.
Maybe you could. We're not. This is not a darling.
Duh.
I wasn't prepared to make a statement on this. I was in no way prepared to make a statement on this issue. I wasn't prepared to discuss it. I'm going to laugh about your statement to move forward. Now, we did watch The Man Who Came to Dinner. Holy shit, that's a great Christmas movie. I love it. It's so witty. It's so modern. I will hold that up against anything made in these modern days.
From 1941. Look, so we have definitely been in the Christmas watching zone. Pretty much everything we're watching from here on out is going to have some sort of Christmas connection, and including the main movie we're going to discuss today, the Polish 1981 movie War of the Worlds. There's some great sad.
You
going
to attempt
Christmas
to say
cheese.
It in Polish?
No, I'm certainly not.
Okay,
but it's one I'm excited to talk about that is connected to the season, but. Yes, Man Who Came to Dinner. I almost, you know, that's one that maybe next year we'll do or something like that. It is hilarious. 1941 and was one that heard Alec talk about and had been wanting to see it for a while, but it's not available anywhere even to rent stream. So we had to get the DVD.
Well, and it's so good because you don't get to have a character that's so engaged in misanthropy that's so
it's so good
he's so unlikable
but so funny
but hilarious, right? And it is that way that the Marx Brothers, like, the joke was always on everybody else. You know what I mean? Like, it is the Marx Brothers to some extent are mean spirited.
Well, yeah, well,
that's one of the things.
It just reminded me
of
like my dad, and I actually asked him, I'm like, "Have you ever heard or seen this movie?" And he never had.
Wow,
I'm like,
well,
it's about some just, you know, total prick who's just a complete asshole to everyone.
But
and he's like, relatable. I love it. Like, so it just reminded me of like my dad.
But Gary W.C. Fields as well.
Totally.
Like, because, you know, W.C. Fields is always just irritated that anybody else is around. He doesn't like to be obligated to do anything. Like, his whole, like, he resents basically anybody trying to, like, guilt him into doing anything. To obligate him.
It's really funny how the premise is this blowhard radio
public speaker.
Again, it's 41.
Radio personality.
I was
going to
say DJ,
professor.
But not really a DJ.
DJ mindset, aren't you, sir?
Is visiting this small town, Ohio, and then he's going to this rich couple's house for a lunch, and he slips on ice and like breaks his leg or whatever it is. He has to stay in the house through Christmas. And the Christmas tree is amazing, and he's just a complete asshole to every single person. And then
he's shamelessly rude. He won't let the family come down the stairs in their own home. Won't let them like use their servants or eat the food that they care to eat. He's great.
It's so funny. And then there's just a cavalcade of characters who come through. They visit or
Jimmy Durante is hilarious in this. He's playing banjo, kind of like a Harpo.
Yeah, he's doing a Harpo. I don't know if tributes, whatever the word is, but he's being a pastiche of Harpo. and we were just dying laughing. No, it's really, really funny, but you do have to, it's not available anywhere. So you do have to just you can get the DVD, but you will want to do it because you'll want to watch it around Christmas. The Man Who Came to Dinner, 1941. Bette Davis is really great in it.
Oh my God.
That was what we just watched. We didn't take notes, but maybe next year or something we'll do a full episode.
It was a pleasure watch.
Well, as is any time we do, you know, stuff for episodes, but we like to, you know, take notes.
Well, we were in such a Bette Davis zone earlier in the year, and I was reading lots of Bette Davis interviews because she is such a character. And my favorite advice that she had for women and people everywhere is, don't take to wear wigs. It will ruin your hair. That was like her big takeaway. Because after the Queen Elizabeth, the film that we so love, she had been like, basically you like shave your forehead or you do a glue down and tape your wigs on. And like when it pulls on your hair, Mike, if you have your hair braided in, if you have it pulled tight, your hairline eventually recedes. So after she played Queen Elizabeth, her hair didn't come back. So that's why she was really hyper-focused on not damaging your hair by wearing wigs too aggressively, not wearing a glue-in, not wearing a tape-in, but just, you know, let your natural hair fly free. I like to wear wigs, but I don't put any of that stuff on. I just stick them on top of my head, and if they get crooked, they do.
So wow. But yeah, no, shout out to Alec, to Filthy. He's the only other person I've ever heard talk about this movie. It's the only way I ever heard of it.
Yeah, it's great.
And
I can't believe I've never seen it because it's like such a
thing
I would have.
I mean, it's so great. But yeah, lots of great Christmas stuff around this time. Of course, at Servant Dad, they played a lot of the classics, Black Christmas.
But what
Don't Open Till Christmas. But I've been
my favorite Margot Kidder just. Black Christmas, Black Choker, Men's Shirt. I love popping a collar up. I just think that's such an amazing look.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love her. Again, another mean spirit person. But I think that the most fun we've had watching Christmas episodes of television shows would be WKRP. That's fucking
hilarious.
Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious. So going watching old school 80s Christmas episodes of sitcoms and WKRP absolutely just was dying laughing.
Some sitcoms just don't age well, but I would say WKRP again is in that pocket where you watch it next to like something modern and it's far superior. Like,
well, of course,
it's got such a breadth of characters. It has a lot of different types of people. It says things that are shocking. But you know, really brings it home at the end. I don't know. I think it's hilarious.
So funny. But yeah, I mean, the Christmas horror was great at serving. But I've been more in the mood for stuff like Holiday and stuff like The Man Who Came to Dinner, stuff like It's a Wonderful Life. It's sort of been the mood I've been in this year.
Because we've been so wholesome.
Well, because we are just the most
wholesome.
This is the wholesome podcast. But of course, we do have.
We made pancakes.
We do. But of course, look.
We're drinking eggnog.
This
being
is
wholesome.
Underground Espionage. It would be, you know, it wouldn't be us if we didn't also recommend, you know, movies like The Passions of Carol around this time of year.
Yes.
Movies like Big Tit Christmas. movies like The Grinch Who Gaped Christmas. You know, we need to also recommend these things to you all.
I forgot about the Grinches of
there's that Whipped Ass that was a Christmas one.
That's right.
So we know we do need to we do need our people to be watching Christmas.
It was also unprepared to make a comment on these films, so I shall just sit back and allow you to
What sort of comment? What do you need to prepare a comment for? All you got to say is
two thumbs up.
Exactly. And
grease
maybe
up your satin sheets and let her go.
There you go.
Like, I mean, look, but we've had rubber sheets, and they're cool.
Yeah. Yeah. See, there you go. Now
you
look at you. There you are, Tara.
Can't sleep on them.
No, those are more utilitarian.
But there's the actual rubber, and then there's the like shiny,
yeah,
kind of
vinyl
stuff
almost.
But both, like the matte actual rubber, I would say, is far superior. But there's a lot of upkeep,
right?
But the shiny stuff, you can't just sleep on that.
Because you just stick. Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's too sweaty.
It's too hot.
That's for activity. You know what I mean? That's an active sheet.
You know action
mean?
Sheet.
It's an action sheet.
I mean, I think everybody knows that. We don't have to they know.
Well, you know,
they've had an action sheet.
This is a podcast, and generally with podcasts, you talk
in your life.
You say words, and then the words.
You have to have a lot of bed accessories. You have to have an action sheet. You have to have. I've always had a bed tablecloth. You know, you want to have a picnic in bed. You want to lay in your bed, eat food. You get a tablecloth, throw it on top of your bed. You just hang out in your bed and eat food. Then you don't get crumbs in your bed. That's a hot tip. You got to have all of these things. And you have to have the pillows that you use and the pillows you don't use.
Look, you are here with us. You know that UE is here to enrich your lives, give you this life
and
advice.
If you get a pillow with a zipper on it, like it doesn't seem like you need one at first, but if you get one for your knee pillow that has a zipper on top, then the case doesn't come off ever. And if that is satin, it's very nice.
Look, we absolutely support bed accessories and whatever you need to make that bed your place
of rest and rejuvenation.
And action.
Well,
Tara.
I was going to say, speaking of action, but yes, Mike, you did a base coat on this because it was so exciting. You were like, we're going to have to like discuss this and watch it together. And I agree at this is a really inspiring film, but it also will, you know, there's things that, when you're young and you have all these hot ideas and you're just kind of trying to figure out what the world is about and you have these moments of illusionment and moments of disillusionment, like this reminds me of that, just excitement of thinking of society, this excitement of thinking about the world, and just kind of the type of thing that makes you pull back and look at the big picture, but then also appreciate the microcosm of your own experience.
Well, you're really coming at this with using a very positive language. I didn't necessarily find it to be exciting. I found it to be very harrowing and very much a movie from the past that is a look to
the future.
The future, and the future that probably at the time, 1981, in the 80s and the 90s, people only thought that maybe this would come ever in their lifetime happen. And then we actually lived through something like this. So I actually found it to be more of a cautionary, harrowing tale.
But I think we can look at it as living through something, but I think that we continually have lived through it. I think it, because it's moving from thing to thing. So we'll get more specific in a minute. But what I'm saying, just to throw it out there, so you saying that I have a positive outtake, I would say that it's like, would you rather be disillusioned? Like, would you rather know the shit that you're dealing with, or would you rather be oblivious to it? And that's the choice. So it's like, it could be positive that the wool is off of your eyes and you can see the things, but it could also be negative because then you have to like understand what you're dealing with. So I mean, but I think that that is one of the topics of this film. Like, do you want to be somebody who understands how you're being fucked by the system, or do you want to be somebody that's watching it all happen?
Well, we are going to get into it, Tara. This is, and there's no way I'm going to pronounce this correctly, I'm already messing it up. So
it's Peter.
Well, but yeah, but I'm trying to say it in some ways like how the Polish pronunciation would be. Peter Sulkins.
Sulkins.
So look, everyone knows I am the world's worst pronouncer, and that was just way too hard for me. But
you're Sam Tripoli level.
This is the set that Vinegar Syndrome put out a while ago, Apocalypse Tetralogy, and it's four movies by this director that are not necessarily for a series, mm-hmm. but they're all a lot of the same actors are in the movies, and they're all talking about this dystopian future. And this is one of those sets that I know a lot of people picked up when it came out because it sounded so cool. And we've had this one for a few years from a sale, you know, and it was still in the shrink wrap. And this is when I was recovering from dental surgery. And I was literally, I marched to the shelves and I said, I'm going to grab something that's still in the shrink wrap. And I'm not even going to read about it. I'm just going to grab something in the shrink wrap and pop it on because I just wanted something.
Yes.
I was sort of delirious, so I didn't even have a specific thing.
You needed
thing,
some distraction.
Anything. And so I was like, hey, that's it. Never watched that. I'm doing it right now. So I popped it open, watched the first movie, Gollum. Loved it. And I would love to talk about all these movies.
I mean, and the set looks fucking great.
It looks great. The Gollum was great. It's a retelling of the Gollum story. Mm-hmm. And then this was the second movie in the set, War of the Worlds, the next century. And this one, just immediately, right as I hit play, I knew that this is going to be something that you and I are going to talk about on the podcast. And then once you see the sad looking Christmas trees, the grim Christmas trees, and the grim holiday decorations that take place or that are part of the set, I was like, well, we're going to do this around Christmas time because it is connected and it is. Look, it is a movie that talks about so many different things, but if anyone watches this now and doesn't immediately think of
one thing,
then then you're just lying to yourself because this is absolutely talks about what we all went through a few years ago.
Well, I do think that the device of having it set at Christmas time, so The basic principle is that of the War of the Worlds. The Martians come down to Earth and it is humanity just trying to cope with the ramifications of the martial law that ensues once the lol Martians are down.
Martians and love law. You know, that's so great. Yeah.
Martians love law. And so having these dreary atmospheres with like a sickly Christmas tree in the background while everybody is depressed and oppressed, I think is such a nice device that is used because truly, like, this has that, you know, blue filter, like that colorlessness, that really limited palette that modern things do, but it's also not that zippy LED feel where it's just hyper real and the movements are exaggerated. You know what I mean? Because after The Ring happened, like, that blue filter became omnipresent. But this is done in such a such a different way, and you just feel the Eastern Europeanness of everything you experience, but it is with a delight.
I mean, again, I there's no delight to me. That's not to say that I did not love this movie, but it's Christmas time in Poland. It's grim and post-apocalyptic, and it really is how I remember Poland. I've only been in Poland once, and it was for a day. It was for one. Well, I mean, it was like a drive in, a show, and then a drive out. But it was a long. It was like a 10-hour drive.
Yeah,
and this is exactly how I think of and remember Poland. It was very bleak. It was very the architecture is exact, like the street that it's on a lot is. It just really reminded me of my memory of Poland. It was a very it was not a very fun day. It was actually a terrible day, and so I love. There's a lot of things from Poland that, you know, I love, and this movie being one of them. But part of that, what I love about it is it does. Is honest and reflects the grim nature of the country.
Yeah, it's a serious. There's nothing whimsical.
No, and so the premise of the movie is we have Iron Edem, and he is a newscaster, an independent newscaster, and the motto of the TV station that he works for is "Reality, we create it." Mm-hmm. And right away, you see him getting a new script for his newscast that's going to be about Martians. And he's like, "What do you mean? I already wrote it." He's like, "No, this is what you're going to read." So right away, you see that he's being fed what he's supposed to read on this quote-unquote independent newscast. Yeah. And he does it with this excitement and smile and in a way that you trust the media, right? You know, and that the media, the TV and the news is who you trust.
Yeah, he puts on his Hino wig.
Yeah,
he puts
totally.
On his big toothy smile, and he really, really sells the words that he is being with a genuine warmth and whimsy and irreverence that resonates with all the people receiving his message.
And it's 3 days to the end of the century, and the 12th day of the new age, because 12 days ago humanity ceased to be lonely because the Martians came and they're in Poland, and now everything has changed. Everything has changed, including you need to register your blood type. You need to
register as a friend of the Martians.
You need to, there's registration centers. You must register your blood type to receive proof of friendship to the Martians.
Mm-hmm. And you get a tag on your ear. Then once you register your blood type, then you get what is it called, like a life pass?
A life permit.
A life permit. You have a permit to life. So you have to have your photo, your blood type.
Yeah.
You have to be tagged as a friend to the Martian. Yeah. The lower the number, the higher on the hierarchy you are. There's so much alliteration that we're saying. I'm struggling.
And I know you're saying, "Oh my God, if that ever happened in my lifetime,
I would
never do anything like that. I would rebel. Are you kidding? I could.
That was wild.
I would never do anything like that." And I guarantee that that's the thought that of anyone who saw this in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 2000s.
But, you know, and I would say that's the most blatant example of, you know, the what's happening here. But I do say in many small ways that we're all constantly engaging in this type of behavior on a small scale at all
absolutely.
Times.
No.
Much like when we were flying and we didn't have our real ID, but we could still fly, but we would have to wait longer and have to receive a pamphlet telling us to get our real ID.
No, absolutely.
You know?
We've all submitted to, especially to, you know, everything being online, all our information is sitting in some weird ether of the internet.
Facial
from
recognition,
our
face all of
to
our texts,
social security, all of our information.
Yeah.
I mean, it is crazy when you, and again, I think it does show. And again, I'm not saying that like Tara and I are better than we do it. You know what I mean? Look, we're here right now.
We're not going to start preaching about this stuff.
We're here right now.
We're just watching this movie.
We're here right now on the internet in some way, and have logged hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours between all our podcasts, yeah. between Noise Extra, between all that underground espionage. We're logged. We're done. Yeah. We're toast. We've put everything out there. We all have to do this. And down, like I said, down to, you know, money, down to you put your social security in for a million things. Like,
down to passwords, down to having things yeah. being cashless so now. So all you're down to crypto this. Where your wallet yes. is being tracked, down to every single thing ever. So it's not that outlandish what's being presented in this film.
But when it's in this way that it's presented, in a way that we saw.
And it's, well, when it's accompanied by martial law and legal systems exactly. that have ramifications that don't allow you to participate in society, that's when it kind of resonates more, because it's saying yeah. like when you're allowed to participate and when you're not. And I think that that's what, to me, you know, when I say something's exciting or whatever, like, I mean, it's exciting for my mind, you know, it's exciting. Just like this made me think of, like, I love Aeschylus, I love Greek tragedies, and you know, saying that I love them, they're so like gut wrenching that you're absolutely like weeping, depressed, all of those things. So to say that that's enjoyable is a strange way to present it. But at the same time, until you see the things taken away that matter to you, much like Iron Edom's wife is stuffed into a body bag.
A body bag, and
immediately, I mean, I was like, well, she's dead, because they just stuff her in a body bag and carry her off in the middle of the night, yeah. and everything is taken away from him.
And they come in and
so
smashes,
that he becomes more
they
submissive.
They come in and chainsaw his apartment, and the Martians are spray painting "All We Need Is Love," yes. and then it becomes so, "All We Need Is Love and Blood."
Yes.
Right?
So like having those things, it's like when you're faced with the thing that matters the most is somebody being taken away, you know, just like in Greek tragedies, you know, it's their choice. It's their country. It's their family. It's their birthright. Like all of those things, that's when it's obvious what matters most. So I do think that they're inspiring in a way that, you know, makes you full of love and full of fight and full of like, you know, willingness to stand up, is because that's when you really think about what matters to you, is the prospect of it being taken away. Just like they're trying to smash Edom's free will by taking away the thing that matters to him the most, is his wife, which maybe he'd be strong for her. And maybe he wouldn't make the decisions he made. Maybe he wouldn't be so compliant if his wife was present with him. You know, like all of these things that make you kind of understand what makes us tick, what makes us love. And yes, Mike, I did laugh when they wrote the "All You Need Is Love."
Oh, yeah,
because,
"All We Need Is Love," yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm talking to you wonderful people here in the underground, and I'm assuming that you've had a chuckle before when you see somebody saying things like that, of that nature.
Yeah.
And like, I'm assuming we're all, when I say disillusioned, it's what I mean is, when people say something so sweet, but back it up in no way.
Well, it's all,
you know,
it's
just
all,
like love, wins.
Yeah, it's all bullshit.
But it's like
yeah.
love wins, but it's like, what do you mean? It's the most vague thing.
Well, all that,
that can ever have the principle of like, be better.
Yeah.
Well, how?
Bullshit.
What's better?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
what's better for some is worse for others. Like, what the fuck are you talking
well,
about?
Well, and
you
just,
love wins.
Just the yeah. saccharine yeah. simplicity that means nothing.
Yeah.
But then what it also is gaslighting. I mean, this movie is a lot about gaslighting. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing of, oh, so you're saying you don't like love? Like,
yeah.
And it's like, no, I'm saying the way you're...
You're saying love isn't important and
yeah.
it won't win out over everything else?
Yeah. So it's that gaslighting that makes you... These people are really good at doing those types of words that if you reject where they're coming from, they're putting it on you that you're... You know, so it's...
Yeah, they're oppositional. And, you know, it's like when I remember being a kid doing multiple choice tests and you would have to
pick... Yeah, that's your kryptonite.
My kryptonite. I cannot do a multiple choice test because I'm so, like, I guess literal. They would have things like, what's the opposite of this? What's the opposite of love? And I'm like, well, what is this manifestation of love? And, you know, they want you to say things like hate. So they would pull out these like grandiose concepts. What's the opposite of honor? What's the opposite of this? And I would just, I could never comprehend like what they could possibly mean because the term is so vague and it can be manifested in so many ways. Like, it's not a thing, right? It's like a motivation. So I never could understand them, and I would have so much trouble on that type of multiple choice test, because it was, to me, it would play out like an absurdity, you know?
And just this rejection of that idea of hate and being, you know, hate is, you know, don't hate. It's just like, no, hate is as powerful and as real as something like love. And the people who try to come at you with this idea of love, they're coming at you with hate. You know what I mean? Like, they're not.
Hate things that don't encourage love.
And that don't go with what they're saying, that don't confirm what they think. And that's a lot of what this movie is about, when they talk about the newscasters being like, no, what we're doing is confirming what you already think. That's point.
All the, and that is the principle of this, is that the newscaster is only, it's the most strong when it's confirming something that people already think, not presenting them with new ideas. It can only work if they're confirming things that people already think. But I do think that's the trap, right? The trap is, all you need is love and blood. Like, blood's a literal thing, but by oversimplifying something and having people rally behind it, it's really easy to, like, group in a lot of people that don't really know what they're rallying behind.
Exactly. So I prefer to go with the Grey Wolves, all you need is hate. But I hate
everything that's not love.
Yeah, exactly. As his newscasts go on, of course, he obviously immediately knows that this is all bullshit, but he still is complying because, as they say, you know, how much is it worth for you to rebel? So he's in his mind, he's still trying to get his wife back. So he feels that he needs to do this. And maybe if he gets the cookie, his wife, that's what he says.
They said, if you want the cookie, you have to do something.
And so
for
he
us.
Needs to do that. But at one point he says in his newscast, you know, your wife will betray you, your friends will leave you, but the TV never will. The TV will not, you know, this divisive thing. And I love when they're talking about the Martians not knowing the coughing just made me fall out of my head.
Just joking a little.
Like how to cross the street. What am I trying to say?
Oh, the Martians may not understand our traffic rules, but you're here to be their friends and help them out.
I love that.
If you see a Martian in the street, make sure you're a friend. I mean,
I love that.
And just, I totally forgot what I was saying because I just got choked. I'm drinking a little kombucha, and I got choked on it. It is delicious. It's pear elderflower kombucha, and I rather like it.
The first glimpse of a sad Christmas tree is when we're in a bar and we see this great prostitute in red, and Edom is sitting at the bar front of this great just. It's actually the happiest of all the Christmas trees so far. They mm-hmm. progressively get grimmer sadder. And sadder, but it's still pretty bare. But I do love this place, but it has the Happy New Year in glitter. But then on one wall, it just says happy, and then he ends up this prostitute's like, you know, he ends up going with her, but all he wants to do is just sleep for
she
2 hours.
She has pink satin sheets, too.
Yeah. Oh, she does.
Yeah,
I know.
She does. It's great. Yeah. She was like, well, you have to leave after 2 hours. He was like, no, I just want to sleep. I might dream about something nicer. And, you know, and just that concept of somebody who, where there's no hope. And again, like having this happen in Poland, like a place that has been constantly taken over, invaded, the rule has changed, like having it happen there, I think this is like the perfect country for this to
totally.
Have come from.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's someone who understands, all of a sudden you wake up and there are new rules and you have to register, and then everybody has to obey new mandates, and
you have to voluntarily register, but if you don't, then you will not, you know,
then
I
you
love
won't
the,
get
like,
a ticket. It's voluntary, but it's mandatory.
Yeah, it's so great.
But again, it is that concept of, you know, the bureaucracy, and they keep saying like the agents who are enrolling him in his, you know, Martian friend project. He was like, I envy you. You have the choice to do this or not. I can't choose because I'm a government agent or what are they called? I'm a civil servant, so I don't have a choice to not comply, but you actually do that have free will.
That guy is great. He's actually the main actor in Gollum. He's like the one who registers him, and he's the main actor in Gollum, and he's really great. He's great in this movie, but he's only in that one scene, but he's really good in Gollum. He's doing it throughout the whole movie. Iron Idem needs to go to live in a night shelter, and this is when we get a real great sad grim.
To live in a night shelter because they came and destroyed his apartment,
and they won't let him back in. And they
said,
blame him.
And they said, "Well, we have to evict you because you really ran amok in your apartment. Your neighbors heard all this rattling and banging, and since you destroyed your apartment, you can't live there anymore."
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, he did not do it, but again. It's that gaslighting,
yeah.
That occurs, and then, you know, he has no place to go.
So he goes to the night shelter, and this is where we get a great, sad, grim Christmas tree and a great scene where they're doing exercises and Silent Night, sung by a Polish singer, is playing. And just with the accent and the timing mm-hmm. of the singing, it's so great.
And they
so
have
dark.
To go give blood by blood type one at a time. Yeah. And then if you're not giving blood actively, then you have to exercise.
Exactly. Yeah. No. So this atmosphere of paranoia and authority and bureaucracy is incredible. I love when he ends up going to this breakfast place that's empty with the line, people lining up for breakfast, and then there's porn on the TVs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that's got a real grim, sad Christmas tree.
Yeah.
And so
just everywhere there's television everywhere within the society. And I do think that I think it's a brilliant film.
Oh, absolutely.
There are some twists that we're not going to reveal. There are things that happen, so I don't want to spoil it. So the things we're talking about aren't going to ruin it for you.
Oh, yeah, no.
But I do recommend seeing it because it is this thing where it makes you think. It makes you think about the situation, just like the human situation of going to work, you know, and I feel like how long has the workday been? About 8 hours. And how much of that is because that's all the amount of time we're willing to give up out of our lives. You know, like you get 8 hours of work, you get 8 hours of sleep, and you get 8 hours to do whatever you want, which may be commuting and then getting ready for bed and then you eat dinner and you're done. But you know what I mean? Just like that society, that contract that we all have in terms of how we're willing to live our lives and what we're willing to do.
Well, look, I mean,
and how much choice is
involved. Even when they're lining up to, you know, donate the blood, and it's like the amount of blood you donate, you get tickets to the big concert at Dreams Hall with this weird band, the Instant Glue. Was that Prague? Like, I don't even know what that is.
You know, it reminded me of like Dio.
I
kept thinking like Dio, but more of like a metal.
It had like
hair
a
metal
synth,
vibe.
Though. To me, it was more like proggy, but I like the chick dancers on there.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, like the lining up with the authoritarian people and the barbed wire. Look, this is not
maybe like Rainbow. It's kind of like
and I don't know how I don't know how it was in other places. And look, this is not. If you think this is controversial and you don't think this was crazy and dystopian feeling, then you've erased how it really felt. But here. A lot of the different places when you to get the vax was mm-hmm. in giant parking lots.
Yes.
The one I went to was in a parking lot for an amusement park.
Yes.
So it was a giant empty parking lot except for the line of cars and then people in masks and these tents and these needles and all this shit. If that was not dystopian and post-apocalyptic, this is not, if you in any way think this is controversial to say that was post-apocalyptic and dystopian, you have erased what that was.
Well, mine is.
And this is exactly the lining up for the blood type. It was and that's the thing is like, I know it's talked about so much and people do want to forget it, but. And it's not like it's something you think about every day, but watching this did make me remember that because it's not something I've thought about. And just that feeling of like, what world is this?
But
what are we doing? What's happening? This is insane.
But you don't know where it's going to stop and you don't know where it's going to end because now we can look back and be like, oh, well, that was the worst it got.
Yeah.
But at the time, you didn't know how it was going to get.
No.
And then like you went to an amusement park parking lot where you had to be in your car.
It was crazy.
I was on Melrose
yeah.
and in Melrose Place. I was on Melrose, and there wasn't enough parking. So you had to park on the street, and then everybody had to walk up. And then you had to stand in a square, and you had to go into these tents, and there were trailers for a dentist's office. So you heard drilling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you heard teeth drilling next door, like, in this parking lot where they had set up dentist's office in trailers for some reason. I don't know. And then it was so windy that the tent blew away because you had to go into the tent. And then one of the giant, like, pop-up easy-ups, like, started rolling down the street and blew away and, like, hit one of the nurses. And she, like, fell down.
Yeah, it's just a complete, it's like this movie.
And then because I have reactions to things, like, I've had to be hospitalized for reactions to vaccines before. They weren't like, don't get it. They were like, well, we'll watch you. So then I had to go sit in a chair that was in a square. Like, they taped off a square on the ground. And I had to go over to the square. And I had to sit in the chair for 30 minutes in the middle of a square by myself before they would let me leave.
No, I mean, it was insane. True apocalyptic end of the world shit. And, you know, you just, you know, you watch something like this, and it's just like, again, you think like, oh, this could never happen. It fucking happened. Like, it wasn't Martians; it was this other thing. But it's like it did, and
it was like living in Hollywood. We used to, so there was a CBS news camera, and it always, you could go online and watch the live feed at all times. And it wasn't like a weird thing. It's kind of like a, it's like a squirrel cam or an eagle cam that, you know, you watch the nest. So I would always look at the feed on this camera to like decide which way to go to work, or just to look at it out of curiosity, because it's fun. It's like a, just a random helicopter feed. So no one can go anywhere. We're all stuck. I look and I see smoke in the distance, so I turn on the CBS helicopter cam. And as the camera starts zooming in on this fire that's like two blocks away from us, it just shuts off.
It shuts off. We literally watched this
live. And they shut off the camera feed, and they were never allowed to put the helicopter camera feed up again, and it's never come back.
Yes.
And we were just like, what in the hell is happening? It was so scary. We were like, is this a fire? What's on fire? Yes. And we're like Googling, like, what's on fire in Hollywood?
And it never came up. And again, this movie is so much about the news staging stuff. There's scenes of the staging deaths.
Yeah.
There's scenes of staging explosions.
Yeah.
And we literally saw it happen. And I mean, dude, it was called lockdown. Like, you can't get any more post-apocalyptic than that.
So again, like, this does cover more than just that, but it's really hard to watch it and not think of your personal story involved. And maybe if, you know, I know that my family in Kentucky, like in rural areas, it wasn't quite the same. Like, they
we're talking about it in the city, of course.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you wonderful people, if you weren't in a city, it may not have been the same experience. But I will say, in good old city living, it was pretty extreme. And it was very, especially Los Angeles, maybe other cities weren't, but I mean, you were under lockdown. There was not, you know, there were not options. I mean, even like having the Lyfts and Ubers have to install plexiglass, like at some point you couldn't get any, and then they had to install like weird plexiglass, and then you're just behind plexiglass everywhere you go. Then I just kept thinking about the plexiglass industry, like how much money they were making. I know, big plexi. Oh man, I know. I'm like, how the fuckers keep it up, man? Like, if you can custom cut some plexiglass, like, you are killing it right now. And now they're just like, oh my god, the good old days. It's expensive custom cut plexi anyway.
But yeah, I mean, look, I don't think you can watch this movie and not think about that stuff now. And you know, obviously it's not, it's, you know, hey, look, maybe it's not a Yuletide type conversation we're having. But again, I think it is important to look at, you know, what, you know, where we came from, and to be like, look, here we are. We are sitting around the Christmas tree. Our Christmas tree is not nearly as grim and sad as the ones here in Poland. But
they have their charm too. These
I love them. I love them. You know, it's like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
The Christmas trees in KRP are pretty darn good too.
WKRP. Really good.
Dennis the Menace had a really good Christmas tree too. I'm not gonna lie, but you know, I was just like, after watching this, like I was trying to like write down like what I was thinking about. And so if you're waffling as to whether or not to like watch this,
you should absolutely get this set. I don't know if it's available streaming anywhere. Pick up the set from Vinegar Syndrome, and
we'll
again,
write down the like Polish title and everything. Yeah.
Loved this movie and really love Gollum. I'm excited to show you Gollum and I'm excited to watch the other movies. So again, really. And again, I like a movie that gives this kind of discussion. Look, we talk about so many different movies on this podcast, shot on video, porn, you know, old, you know, Z-grade slashers, et cetera. So many different types of movies. And I do think it's still important to watch movies like this that garner conversations, talk about serious topics, talk about topics that might be uncomfortable and people want to not talk about and forget. But this is, you know, we are still able to discuss things freely in a way that we can have these discussions here, and this is the type of movie that elicits these ideas and discussions. And Gollum is the same. I mean, look, pick this set up. It's a fantastic set,
and so, you know, it makes me feel like the things in a more modern way, much like I was saying, like Euripides or Aeschylus. It makes me think of like Seven Against Thebes or I don't know. Anyway, so like just like, are we as human beings capable of handling like real human reactions? Can there be recovery from somebody behaving distastefully? You know what I mean? Like, why is it that, and so often you'll see somebody do something that you don't agree with and you're like, well, they're shut off. Like, especially now with our limited attention spans, like maybe even now, like the things we were talking about, you're like, well, I'm done with the Connollys. It's sad that I'm not listening to them anymore. You have it's like somebody will say something and you're like, well, I guess I don't agree with them anymore. So I have to like not ever think of them again. Like not allowing like what we permit. You know
what's funny? I was thinking about this recently. Just, I don't even remember what made me think about it, but I definitely will just completely cut and
I know.
And
erase, I mean, I
somebody.
Think that's a very human reaction.
But for me, I think a lot of times, and I was thinking about what makes me do that, mm-hmm. and more so than someone doing something to me, it's doing something to you or to a friend, if someone, you know, betrays a friend of mine or you, you know, specifically, then they are literally dead and I will never, ever acknowledge, think about, talk to them. I'll sell every album I have that they're on.
Yeah.
I know. And maybe that's some sort of weird Irishness in us. We're sort of like, maybe that's like the sort of
you
like
could fuck
self-depressed...
me over, but if you do something to Mike, you're dead to me.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. Like the like self,
or a friend,
the
self-depreciating
like thing. But it's like, yeah, if you, I mean, you do something to me too. Don't believe me. It's also grounds for getting cut out. But I'm quicker to do. Not always. My point is, I'm quicker to do it if it's against somebody that I love. Mm-hmm. I'm quicker to cut them off. But also, definitely, like, people I'll listen to or podcasts or something like that, if they go down a certain rabbit hole that I just, like, it basically frames the rest of what they say, I'll pretty much, not always, but certain, I guess what I'm saying is there's certain things that I can't come back from, and then there's certain things where, like, oh, this person doesn't like that movie I love. Okay, yeah, whatever. I can still listen to the podcast. You know, whatever. I can move past
but
people's
some,
different opinions.
Some divisive opinions are fun, though. Like, sometimes if somebody hates a thing you love, that's a movie or a piece of art, you're like, oh, that's hilarious. I love that, and they hate it.
I like...
Just like Jim Cornette doesn't like wrestlers we like, but we think it's hilarious.
I will listen to Jim Cornette talk shit about deathmatch wrestling, and we're maybe going to go to a death match tonight. Like, I love death match wrestling, but I will listen to Jim Cornette talk shit about it. So yes, exactly. Tara, point is I enjoy different opinions in some ways.
Yes.
Then there's other ways
where
absolutely am intolerant to them. And even down to, like, again, you say one bad thing about a friend of mine or someone I love, I'm sort of like, nope, I'm not interested in this conversation and we're done.
Yeah.
So
But it's but with like bands, you know, a band you could love every album they've ever put out, then they put out a new one and you're like, don't like that at all, never gonna listen to it. But you don't hate that band forever.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? You're just like, well, I didn't like that one.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just strange. Like that's, you know, kind of like also what I was thinking about, like how you can garner the distaste of a population, you can garner the distaste of an individual, you can get cut out of society for tiny things or big things that you do, whereas it's not looked at as the whole of your actions. Like you could be a saint up until this point. You could be Bill Cosby.
Right.
And then all of a sudden,
uh-oh,
you roofie a bunch of broads.
And then,
and then it's over. But like that, but again, like who knows what actually happened to any of the situation. But like look at the status he had, and then the fall is so
sure
wild. But like, I mean, that's a terrible example, but it's a funny example, and that's why I brought it up. And that's what I want to say is that it's just like on a small level, we're all deciding what we permit in
yeah
society and what we don't permit.
Yeah.
And it's harder when you are one of the weirdos or creeps or whatever, or just the strange people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think that, you know, my whole life, wherever I am, I moved around a lot as a kid. Everywhere I'd go, like a little kid would call me a witch, or they would just know immediately that I was weird. And it's like, I don't know how people know, you know? I could try to look as normal as I want and talk about normal things, but I'll always get sniffed out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So why fight it? Like, you don't try to be something you're not, because you're just, once you're weird, you're fucking weird.
Yeah,
you know
yeah
what
yeah
I mean? You just can't change it. So just embrace it and be that. But it's like how, when you're the person who's never going to be integrated well into normal society, it's interesting to watch how people choose who gets to participate in normal
yeah
society, because it's just so
we know
antithetic
we're never
to
really
how you behave.
Yeah, and we know we're never really, it's not anything we want, you know what I mean? Like, so
yeah, they're not going to choose something that we find really exciting.
No.
You know?
Never.
They're not going to be selling our satin sheets in grocery stores.
Hey,
you know what I mean? Like,
I'd buy them,
Target's not coming out with a rubber bedding line
yeah
just for us. And they should. Maybe something
leopard
convertible,
print,
like a convertible rubber bedding line. You
I'm
have like
in
a liner and you like flip it up. Anyway, something of that. But I'm just saying, like, so, but I, so to some extent, when I have that distasteful reaction to me as somebody in the underground, as somebody who's weird, it's always interesting because it's like, even there, you know, we try to be open. We try to be the most permissive. We try to take in the freaks, the weirdos, the alternate opinions, the alternate thought. But then sometimes everybody has their limits. You know,
they sure do.
So and then again, so those are the things I was thinking about in this film. But I also like that there was also like this bigger thing trying to combat the underground resistance. And they had their ways of talking about the underground
yeah
resistance. And so, you know, in our ways, I'm sure everybody on here had their own little place in the underground resistance. And then, you know, changing someone's mind. Like, what does it take to change somebody's mind? Somebody can tell you the truth, but, like, what does it take for you to actually, like, believe them? And then, like, what is the nature of reality now that we are faced with media and photographs and videos where we know they don't necessarily reflect reality, experience, everything?
Right.
Especially now with AI.
Yes.
Like, the fact
like, how do we navigate that?
Reality is even changing. Like,
yes,
the nature.
Reality, we create it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the tagline. It's like, reality, we create it. And that's true. Like, there are things that don't exist that have storyline. Like, just even navigating in just a reality that is not based on what they would have thought of as reality 20 years ago.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You know,
just navigating this new
the need
world
to like something. If you didn't video it, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
yeah
all of Pixar didn't happen. Like that whole concept, being confronted with photos of things the way they look and then looking in reality and things aren't looking the same. Then like just the concept of like action versus passivity, society versus the individual, collective truth being different from the truth of the individual. Like when we all kind of like land on what we decide happened, but when you talk to somebody who was there, like how many times, Mike, have we like known somebody that's involved with something that was like viral or happened, and then the whole, or read a Wikipedia article and it's totally fucking wrong?
Well, that's for sure.
That's always
user based
yeah
Wikipedia. It's
but,
all it is.
But the truth that everybody lands on
yeah.
is not going to be the same as weirder, the people involved in the situation.
And it's definitely getting more fractured as the years go on.
Yeah. And but the thing that really made me think of Greek tragedy was the idea, even in this, of, you know, free will and fate, because the gods in this would be the media or the government or the people that are controlling the television.
And our hero is the individual.
And the individual. So they,
Mr. Idem.
But the whole thing that happens in Greek tragedy is that the hero is always saying they have free will and saying that they can do something different. Where in the beginning, just like Oedipus, they're saying you're going to have sex with your mother. You're going to, you know, live your life blind. You're going to kill your father. You're going to kill your father. You're going to have sex with your mother. And Oedipus thinks that he's doing everything he can. He's sent away. He goes to different places. He, you know, builds his own life. He becomes a king in his own right. Then he meets a stranger on the road and kills him. Guess who it turns out to be? His father. Then, because he kills the stranger on the road, then he rises up, goes to the palace, gets the queen, has some kids with her. Guess what? Those are his, that was his mom, you know? Like, the whole thing, then the tragedy of Antigone, the 70s, anyway, the whole thing, he's saying that he's never going to meet that fate, but he does. Just like in this film, he's saying he's not going to meet that fate and give in. He's not going to toe the line for the media, but they ensure that he does.
Absolutely, and that is the tragedy.
Exactly.
That is the tragedy.
And that's just, you know, if somebody wants to exist, if they want to participate, then there are ways to ensure that they are carrying out their fate, whether they know it or not.
But look, we are the underground. You listening are the underground, and you should always fight, and you should always carve the path of the underground, and you should resist, and you should support the underground. This is what we, this is our motto. This is how we live our lives. And
whatever weird thing you love, or the weird thing that you cling to and causes you joy, then I think that seeing something as dystopian as this makes you really appreciate it. You know,
absolutely.
Going to Indianapolis makes you love your buckwheat pillow.
It does. And, you know, we also a thing that is important, a through line that is important, is to not escape, but to build and build your own world in this world. And you don't escape, don't close your eyes, but don't give in to the bullshit and to the overground. You remain in the underground, but you're a spy. It's the espionage, Tara. You can spy on the overground, but build your world within the underground. That is what we do here, and that's what we hope you all do. Look, Apocalypse Tetralogy, great set from Vinegar Syndrome. Gotta pick it up. Great conversation, Tara. Heavy one today. Heavy movie evokes a heavy conversation. So, Tara, after this heavy conversation, how about next episode we go to one of our expertise, our subject that we love and know so well. Let's do some porn, and let's do The Passions of Carol.
'70s. We have to do Christmas The Passions of Carol. That's porn, great. The Thank Passions you so of much. Carol.
So that is going to be next week. We're going back into some porn. Look, everybody, usher in the end of the year. Shut the doors, light the tree, and enjoy this season. The end of the year, year's ending. And we will be back next week with The Passions.